Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that is a kind of, well, owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to God's glory and that of his kingdom. There is no more serious peril to our country, no greater danger, no more deadly enemy in our history than that we are confronting today from the Chinese Communist Party. If there were any doubt about this, and we talk about it most days, I think it's been put to rest by a leaked videotape of senior leaders in Guangdong province in China. It's top secret video, mind you, describing their plans for transitioning from what is called, quote, normal to war, unquote. In the course of that video, you see some evidence that this transition is well underway, that they are deadly serious about it, and what they mean is war, not just with Taiwan, but almost certainly with us as well. And they are busily in this province and probably across the nation engaged in preparations for it. To discuss this and much more, I'm delighted to have with us a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy, a distinguished veteran of the United States Army's Special Operations Units, a man who has specialized in the course of his service in uniform in, among other things, psychological warfare operations. And we're going to talk with him about whether that's what we're confronting here today or not. His name is Colonel John Mills, United States Army retired. He has also served our country in civilian capacities and senior levels in the Office of the Secretary of Defense. We're always delighted to catch up with him, but especially at a moment such as this. John Mills, welcome back to Securing America, sir. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank. Always an honor to be with you.
So what do you make of this videotape, John? Is it psyops or is it, do you think, the real deal?
Not totally clear. I found it very interesting. It essentially was a military order. Now, those who were trained in the U.S. military in the joint operational process and execution system know in JOPES the different FRAGO, task order, all these official documents that are relatively void of any political statements. They're very factual and directional and actionable. What we saw was about three quarters ideology, about one quarter military direction. And it definitely appeared to be a call to arms and a mobilization. But it was unclear who exactly is the target audience in this tape. Is it for domestic consumption? Is it outward facing? And in PSYOP, that's one of your, and any form of strategic communication, job one is to figure out who is your target audience. So what I find interesting is who did they mean to have be the target audience? And some of their behavior was a bit over the top in this. Again, heavy on ideology while still having specific actionable military direction.
So if I can translate all of that, there's reason to believe this is real. And more to the point, what is going on, which it records, is serious preparations for war. Putting in short, this particular province, Guangdong, but again, presumably every other one, on a war footing to mount and contend with whatever response we might mount in return to an attack by the Chinese Communist Party on, as I say, Taiwan most immediately, but perhaps other parts of our areas of interest, shall we say, and maybe even our own territory. And John, talk a little bit about what other manifestations we've seen in terms of Chinese diplomatic as well as military and other sorts of preparations shaping, as they say in the United States Army, the battlefield.
Yeah, Frank, the ball is in play and world conflict is ongoing. A lot of Americans don't really realize. They say, well, there's not bombs or missiles going off other than the Ukraine, and that's just the Ukraine. It has nothing to do with anything else that's going on. I said, oh, yes, yes, it does. And as we started talking about last fall, essentially, the written, agreed upon alliance between China, the much senior partner, and Russia, the much junior partner, and that after the Olympics, Russia was going to analysis showed that we felt and that Russia was going to kick it off with the Ukraine, which has turned into a quagmire and beginning to look in some ways like a defeat. But part of that was Putin selling the 72-hour blitz story to Xi. The main game was going to be in the Pacific. I would assert that it's already started in the Pacific and in many ways they've enveloped and gone around. They've gone far, you know, imagine us facing China from, let's say, Hawaii, them facing us. So they've already slipped around our left flank to their right by going through, bypassing Taiwan, the security pact with the Solomon Islands, and then continuing on through like the Federated States of Micronesia and a number of these island republics that are just not a priority for our hapless State Department.
And when you say they've gone into these islands, what does that mean? Literally, again, you're a man with long experience in the contingency planning and operations at the level of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, among other things. Are they, in fact, taking, as they seem to have done elsewhere, important steps towards translating arrangements, whether they're financial, whether they're diplomatic, whether they're positioning of police forces and the like, into, well, putting in place essentially power projection options, at least in these various places? And again, towards what end? Is it simply encircling Taiwan and making the defense of it that much more difficult? Or does it mean perhaps being able to operate against Hawaii or other parts of, again, our interests in the Pacific?
Yeah, well, I would say in their calculus and analysis of the situation, it's just like us in World War II. Do we take on Italy first or Germany, the weaker partner or the senior partner in the European theater? That was the conundrum. And the analysis from at least the American and British was take on the Italians first. And they folded like a cheap suit. So in the Pacific, I think in many ways, the Chinese planners are looking at it the same way. Do they expend an enormous amount of resources on Taiwan when the real game is America? Because once they start with Taiwan, and remember, Japan will definitely fight for Taiwan. And Japan has a formidable Navy and Air Force. They maybe don't have nuclear weapons, but Japan will fight. And if Japan fights, we're going to be in this one way or another, as feckless as Biden has been. And it's already started. These are essentially basing agreements. And whether these island republics realize it or not, through the Belt and Road agreements they sign, they are essentially handing over their sovereign territory to China when China wants to use it for whatever they want to use it for. These are basing rights that they are established, China is already established.
Yeah, this is such an important point, John. We have to take a short break. I want to come back to what you just alluded to, which is the fecklessness of the Biden administration and the extent to which, by seemingly telegraphing a lack of resolve or at least of clarity about what we will do in the event of an attack by China on Taiwan, we are setting the stage for just such an attack. We'll be right back with more with Colonel John Mills, United States Army, retired, right after this.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. As Team Biden continues to flail publicly about what, if anything, it will do if the Chinese Communist Party attacks Taiwan, the CCP's menace is becoming ever clearer. A leaked video of a top-secret meeting on May 14th shows leaders in Guangdong Province planning the transition from, quote, normal to war, unquote. And hacked Chinese police data confirms the CCP's oppression and genocide of Uyghur Muslims and other minorities. Such revelations should bring to a screeching halt efforts to get U.S. military personnel and other government employees to invest their retirement savings in communist Chinese companies. But will it? It's still possible to prevent the Thrift Savings Plan from inflicting a disaster on investors and a threat to our national security. Urge your representatives to stop what amounts to aiding and abetting the enemy on the eve of war at notspforccp.org. This is Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and we are continuing a tremendously timely conversation with one of our country's most thoughtful and, I believe, impactful analysts of military matters, a man with long experience in the uniform of the United States Army, as well as in other positions in our government at the Office of the Secretary of Defense, the National Security Council, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and elsewhere. John Mills is his name. Colonel, we were talking about the prospects that China may essentially make an old-fashioned invasion and potentially very expensive attack against Taiwan unnecessary or at least easier by some of the operations that it's engaged on elsewhere in islands beyond the first island chain, as it's called. Talk, if you would, about how you believe the Chinese are perceiving what the United States government has been saying lately about its response to an attack, either direct or presumably one that might involve some of these more oblique actions as well.
Well, once again, President Biden has made a clear statement on defending Taiwan, and then his staff rolls it back. This is utterly ridiculous. This is like Reagan staffers rolling back, tear down this wall, saying, oh, we didn't really mean to tear down this wall. That was just the president was confused. This is ridiculous because they like to kind of... the elites and their Harvard-trained and British accents like to talk about strategic ambiguity when it relates to Taiwan. Well, strategic ambiguity has two components, clarity and resolve. Clarity and resolve. They are not demonstrating clarity and resolve. President Biden is acting like Mr. Magoo, and so... absolute confusion is not on our side. Is not strategic ambiguity. So there's a total.
And John, let me just say, especially against the backdrop of the Chinese, I am sure having confidence that they own Joe Biden as a result of the elite capture they've run against him and his family, for that matter. And this brings me to a second point, John. If we're seeing evidence, and you've been very clear in describing it, as mobilization for war by the Chinese Communist Party, combined now with another set of revelations, leaks of a treasure trove of information by... the Daily Mail, I guess, among others, of police blotter records, I guess you might call them, concerning how the Chinese party's security apparatus is dealing with these pesky Uyghur Muslims and other ethnic minorities out in what the locals call East Turkestan, the Chinese call Xinjiang. It's a pretty damning indictment, is it not, of the Chinese record of actual human rights abuses on an immense scale and indeed genocide?
Yeah, it's as simple as this. If anybody and any reasonable human being should be concerned with the human rights of all human beings, the absolute just injustice and wiping out of the Uyghur population, but also Falun Gong Christians across China, but in East Turkestan has been shameful. It is a genocide. And anybody who enables that, such as firms such as Nike, nobody should be wearing Nike products. If you wear a Nike product, that means you are advocating genocide in Xinjiang, and it's wrong. It is
enabling
wrong.
It, actually. Yeah, I would agree, and Apple and so many others. But John, here's the kicker. We're learning that there are shoot-to-kill orders evidently in place, if anybody dares to try to get out of these so-called re-education camps, the oppression that's going on inside them, the rape on a systemic basis and the like is just outrageous. But let me ask you this, John. You're a participant, as I understand it, in the federal government's retirement program known as the Thrift Savings Plan. The board that oversees that, the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, working hand in glove with the principal manager of those funds, a guy by the name of Larry Fink, the CEO of an immense financial institution known as BlackRock, are working assiduously to have people like you, John, military, past and present, civilian government employees, invest your money, your retirement savings, unwittingly, perhaps, in Chinese Communist Party companies. Never mind the Nikes. I'm talking about companies, some of them have been sanctioned by our government. Some of them are actually working directly for the People's Liberation Army, acquiring for it weapons designed to kill people like you and your comrades. What is up with that, John? And what's your attitude towards such a proposition?
Well, clearly we need to address the Thrift Savings Board. This is shameful that we're even, it's an embarrassing that we're even having this conversation. This board, everybody needs to, who has federal retirement, civilian or uniform, and guess what? The uniform is evolving their retirement system where it's going to be more and more and more like the civilian thrift savings program. That means our dollars that we're setting aside for our future is really being handed right over to the Chinese to develop weapons to kill us and to oppress their population. So this, there is just the Federal Thrift Savings Board, which if you just look that up, you'll see the board members, there's at least two of them have a connection with NBA teams as part owners. It is just horrendous, shameful, and wrong that we are using those funds to fund the Chinese. Absolutely, this is wrong and needs to be stopped.
Amen to all of that, John. And your point about the NBA, of course, is the NBA, like Nike and like Apple and many of these other American companies, Bill Gates's, Microsoft and so on, have been deeply compromised by the Chinese Communist Party. They're working there. They're employing people there, sometimes slave labor, it seems. But they're honed. They're compromised by the Chinese to the point where the NBA, you know, will be completely uncritical, shall we say, of Hong Kong and so much else that's going on there. John, let me just ask you this specific point. There is an effort underway. We're behind it as part of a larger coalition called No TSP for CCP, meaning No Thrift Savings Plan for the Chinese Communist Party, and people can get in touch directly with their elected representatives about this travesty, as John, you've pointed out so powerfully, by going to that website, notspforccp.org. Please just take a moment to light these guys up. We need very urgently, there has been, in fact, a board meeting of this oversight board, the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, just today. And they seem hell-bent to try to get this in place. And John, I just want to say, your retirement savings earned through assiduous service to our country should not be either squandered or worse, used to aid and abet our mortal enemy, the Chinese Communist Party. And I just want to put a fine point on it, because that seems to me to be treason, the very definition of it. I wish I had time to give you a moment to respond. I don't today, John, but we'll have you back very soon for a further conversation about all of this. Thank you for your leadership and your great service to our country, my friend, over so many years. We're going to talk a bit more about all of this with Claudia Rosette on the other side of a very short break, world-class investigative reporter. Stay tuned.
Night after night in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, and it's my distinct pleasure to say we're joined by a dear friend of many years, not to be confused with an old friend, a woman I have come to admire tremendously for both her courage and her tenacity in covering some of the most challenging stories of our time, often from behind enemy lines in places like Moscow and in Hong Kong, even back in the day when it was still a little dodgy for a Wall Street Journal reporter and editorial writer. Claudia Rosette is her name, the Foreign Policy Fellow of the Independent Women's Forum, and always a welcome guest here. Claudia, it's good to have you back with us at Securing America. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks, Frank. Great to be here.
So, Claudia, I want to draw on some of your cumulative experiences with bad actors. Let's start with Vladimir Putin. And there's a lot of speculation about what he's up to. From your time monitoring the Kremlin closely, what do you think are his ultimate objectives? Do they have much to do with NATO expansion or really Russia's expansion? And if you would, just maybe address yourself to what happens if, in fact, Finland and Sweden do join NATO.
This is all about Russia expansion, and it tracks back to when the Soviet Union fell. Right away, there was a contingent that thought that was a great tragedy. Putin himself, years later, said it was, I believe he said, the worst disaster, geopolitical disaster of the 20th century.
Greatest catastrophe, I think, was his
catastrophe. Thank you. Exactly. And this proceeds from that. that view of the world, that the Soviet Union was a great power. Now, Putin didn't like communism. He disparages it. You know, he understands the immense damage that it did to the Soviet economy, but he does want the expansion of the Soviet Union. And he has inherited a lot of the techniques that kept the Soviet regime in power. He's a KGB-trained thug. He understands their manipulative techniques very well. He uses them all the time. He's ruthless. And NATO is in the way in the sense that if they stand up to him, it's a problem for him. But this is basically about resurrecting as a sort of mystical Mother Russia nouveau empire, what was the Soviet Union, but without the communist problem that beggared the country and its satellites.
Do we have a vital interest in the outcome of this conflict with Ukraine?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Look, this is right now the front line. We are looking more and more. This is becoming more and more dangerous, urgent, present, and violent. A showdown between tyranny and the free world. It's that basic. And right now, Ukraine is the front line. In 2019, when you saw the protests in Hong Kong as China began to throttle a free society there, that was the front line. Ukraine is now the front line. Very likely Taiwan is the next front line. These are various places where important things are being tested at the margin, vital things to the shape of the world order in this century. Right now, that's Ukraine.
And Claudia, there are those who agree with you and me that China is the main thing, the Chinese Communist Party, the threat that it represents. And I think we're all very much concerned that it is poised to attack Taiwan. To those who would argue that, well, we can't afford a two-front war, we need to keep our eye on Taiwan and that main threat, what do you say about what we're doing in Ukraine at the moment? And should we be doing more or something different, do you think?
Yeah, we should be doing more. We should look, there are a couple of pieces to that. In Ukraine, the Biden administration effectively invited this invasion, gave Russia a green light with everything from President Biden's mention that he'd tolerate a minor incursion, which was a very bad thing to say, to slow walking the weapons, to sort of trying to tailor them to the immediate need. If they had sent in the heavy artillery they finally began to send, it's possible you wouldn't have seen that invasion in the first place if we'd done it last year as Putin began massing troops. Instead, what you saw was President Biden held a summit in Geneva with Vladimir Putin, dignified him with that, and came away with nothing, followed by the debacle in Afghanistan. So you have all of those problems. What could have been done differently? We could have actually deterred the invasion. We could even now be doing more to stop it. You know, the ridiculous nonsense that went over the MiGs that Ukraine was asking for, where it became basically the Biden administration wanted to fob off responsibility for that on Poland if the Poles were willing to do it. The United States was what? Afraid to send them? Then what else should we be doing?
Leading from behind, I think, is the term that has been described, applied to these sorts of issues. Claudia, well, let me just turn then fully to China. If we should be doing more in Ukraine, what should we be doing now to learn the lessons of Ukraine, which it seems, again, we agree vehemently, should involve providing them with the equipment they need to deter China now, not try to scramble and get it to them after the fact if it does take place.
Yes, Frank, look, what we actually need to be doing is we need to be able to fight a two-front war. We have huge problems on two fronts. We have Russia, which is actively invading Eastern Europe right now. We have China, which is threatening to do so and is far more powerful and efficient. You know, people keep saying, well, the problems of the Russian military must be giving real pause to Xi Jinping. I don't think that's how this works. You need to remember, China looks down on the Russians. Xi Jinping doesn't look at Putin and see, they may talk about their no limits partnership, and they certainly have a partnership, especially in military affairs. But I don't think Xi Jinping looks and says, gee, that could be me. The Russians have vast resources and territory and squander it relentlessly. You know, they have this huge reserve of oil and gas. China is hungry for that. And they have made out of manpower a much more successful economy for all its horrendous problems. And they look down on Russia. I think that Xi Jinping is studying that to see what useful lessons he can take to improve his abilities. But I think the message he's taking is the U.S. will be late, slow, contradict itself. It is led by a president who doesn't always seem to exactly know what he's doing and left with the question of who's in charge. Bottom line, Frank, we need to be able to fight a two-front war. And while that might be sound like la-la land because the administration is not effectively preparing for that, that is what we're going to get if we are not prepared to deter it.
Well, let me drill down on that point, Claudia, because I agree. I personally think we're in a global war. It's the early stages of it, and frankly, it could expand vastly beyond these two fronts, let alone be a two-front instead of a one-front problem. But Claudia, the practice of the administration now on three different occasions that I can think of having the president answer directly a pointed question to him about whether the United States will defend Taiwan has been, yes, we are obliged to do that. And within sometimes minutes, the White House comes back and says, well, what the president meant to say is maybe not, we're back to strategic ambiguity. Claudia, I'm not sure whether you're aware of this. I talked about it earlier with Gordon Chang. We have a very interesting and I think timely contribution made to this debate about Taiwan called Stopping a Taiwan Invasion by an expert panel led by our own Dr. Stephen Bryan. It pretty much puts at the top of the list of the things we should be doing, abandoning strategic ambiguity in favor of strategic clarity. Your thoughts on the importance of that and what the Chinese are taking away from this toing and froing.
Yeah, look, the vital element of deterrence is that you have to be credible. When you say you can't, don't do that or you will be sorry, you have to be very believable. And this toing and froing undermines that at every turn, you know, slopped on top of the Afghanistan route, which said the U.S. won't stand up for these things, slopped on top of the repeated assertions by President Biden and his team that they did not want to engage U.S. troops to engage with the troops of a major military power. They were talking about Russia. But believe me, China heard that. And that's a message that's very disconcerting about Taiwan. Finally, let me go for a minute to diplomacy. On the UN front, we've seen interesting sort of footy by China back and forth on where it stands on Ukraine and all the UN meetings that have actually done nothing. But China keeps talking about the importance of sovereignty and territorial integrity. Well, what China, I'm sure, basically where that translates to for China is as soon as they say Taiwan belongs to us, they say we have full claim to that. Nobody else can interfere. That's the diplomatic groundwork being laid by what sounds like agreement with the U.S. on Ukraine. And in that sense, it is vital to discriminate between Taiwan and the People's Republic of China. It is vital and more urgently than it ever was. So strategic ambiguity is not serving the purpose it did in, say, 1968.
When we were powerful, and the Chinese, I think, had to take into account that disparity in capabilities. No more, unfortunately. Claudia Rosette, we have to leave it at that for the moment, but we will return to you soon for updates on all of this and more. Your insights are tremendously important and appreciated. We'll talk to you soon. Next up, we will speak with Bill Walton about the financial aspects of all of this and more. Straight ahead.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. As Team Biden continues to flail publicly about what, if anything, it will do if the Chinese Communist Party attacks Taiwan, the CCP's menace is becoming ever clearer. A leaked video of a top-secret meeting on May 14th shows leaders in Guangdong Province planning the transition from, quote, normal to war, unquote. And hacked Chinese police data confirms the CCP's oppression and genocide of Uyghur Muslims and other minorities. Such revelations should bring to a screeching halt efforts to get U.S. military personnel and other government employees to invest their retirement savings in communist Chinese companies. But will it? It's still possible to prevent the Thrift Savings Plan from inflicting a disaster on investors and a threat to our national security. Urge your representatives to stop what amounts to aiding and abetting the enemy on the eve of war at notspforccp.org. This is Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and we're going to continue our conversations about what the Chinese are doing to prepare for war with one of our regulars, I'm very pleased to say, Bill Walton, the host of The Bill Walton Show. He's a former Master of the Universe on Wall Street, Alliance Capital's CEO. He's a very prominent figure in Washington circles these days, among other things, as a former president of the Council for National Policy, which I'm proud to be a member, knows his way around both politics and finance, and therefore just the perfect guy to talk to about what the Chinese are up to and what it means for all of us. Bill, it's good to have you back. Welcome. So we've been talking with our previous guests about what China is up to, specifically with respect to Taiwan, but it seems likely that it's not going to be restricted to that, especially when you look at this video out of Guangdong province that talks about the transition from, quote, normal to war, unquote. You've had a chance to take a look at that video. What did you make of it, Bill, and specifically what it seems to portend?
Well, first, I think we both aren't sure whether it's completely legitimate, but it certainly looked legitimate. And if it was, what they're talking about is very scary. I mean, to set the stage a bit, Guangdong is the largest population in China by largest province by population in China, and it sits on the coast, roughly kind of where Georgia sits in America, just off the coast of Taiwan, and it's almost 2 million GDP is almost $2 trillion. And that's a significant chunk of the Chinese economy, almost a sixth of it. And so it's deeply engaged in Taiwan and manufacturing and trade and commerce. And it's really the epicenter, sort of the California and New York rolled into one in China. So this is an important province. This is not a test case out somewhere west where it doesn't count. And what they're talking about.
I assume it's fair to believe that if they're doing it there, they're probably doing similar kind of preparations and planning elsewhere, don't you think?
One would think, but boy, if you wanted to start, this would be the province you would start with because it is the most strategic.
Another data point, Bill, excuse me for interrupting, but another data point, and that is I think these guys talk explicitly about implementing national instructions. So again, that I think plays into the idea that this is not a one-off.
Well, I'm reading what they said. They said we want to resolutely implement the orders of Party Central Committee President Xi, and resolutely accomplish Guangdong's mission of routinely ensuring resources to achieve a strategic and decisive victory. We won't hesitate to start a war, crush Taiwan and strong enemies' plots, and resolutely defend national sovereignty and territorial integrity. But here's the really interesting kicker. You and I have been wondering what's going on with Shanghai and locking down 25 million people, as well as 75 to 100 other cities in China. Here's a sentence. We should transform the experiences we gain from pandemic prevention and control in previous years into wartime social prevention and control to ensure that people's productive lives are in order, to ensure social stability, on and on and on and on. But if we wonder what the lockdowns have been about in China, it's a test case for wartime conditions.
Right. And again, the central party's control of the entire apparatus, including, of course, the notorious social credit.
What's system. Chilling, Frank, is the authoritarian tone of this film. And if true, it's really something to behold. It's like a straight out of a bad Bond movie, where it's all authoritarian this and taking orders and people, you know, stepping in to kick and bow and pray. And it was just, everybody's in lockstep here. And if you wonder about the totalitarian control of Chinese society, this is a video you need to see.
No, absolutely. And I think you hit on the right adjective for this. It is totalitarian. It's not just authoritarian. It's full on Orwellian control. And Bill, I you mentioned, or at least alluded to, what is happening to populations within China, notably minorities that are disfavored by the party. They are particularly subjected to this kind of control, totalitarian, yes, but in some cases genocidal. We've learned some things about that in a data dump, I guess a hack of Chinese police in what the Chinese call Xinjiang province. The residents call it East Turkestan. What do we know about the oppression of people using these kinds of instruments of state power that's being taken to those, as I say, disfavored minorities as well?
Well, the pattern seems to be to work to practice their totalitarianism on marginalized parts of the Chinese country, Chinese society, and then become an equal opportunity oppressor and move to the majority, as they've done with Shanghai. The thing we've got to be speculating on is this lockdown, evidently, I don't think, you don't think, is just about the a virus. It's really about doing something. It's crushing their economic activity. Why would Xi do that? Well, he's deliberately trying to pull China inward. He'd like to uncouple China from the world economy so they can preserve their defensive or offensive stature in case of war. But what that also does is it wrecks the U.S. economy and the global economy. And, you know, we're seeing food shortages and price increases here in the United States, but the supply chain disruptions that we saw during the pandemic are going to pale in comparison to what we're going to see if China really keeps Shanghai shut down. And I understand they just shut down their second largest port as well in the last month. And so this is spreading, not ebbing.
You've mentioned, Bill, I think a very profound issue that I know you've featured in your programming. I've been on a couple of shows about it. Supply chains involving, among other things, critical medicines for our country. And that's just one example of our dependency. We have to take a short break, Bill. When we come back, I want to talk about everything we've discussed in terms of the threats to our national security, perhaps our existence, the human rights abuses, the dangers associated with this sort of economic warfare, and whether or not this is a good time to be investing in Chinese Communist Party companies. That and more straight ahead. Welcome back. We are conversing with Bill Walton, the host of the Bill Walton television podcast, a terrific program. I've been a guest on it on a number of occasions, and I admire tremendously the programming that Bill does. It's a great resource, and we're always delighted to be able to showcase it here with him on his regular visits with us. Bill, we were talking a bit about the dangers emanating from communist China and some recent insights that we've had, a video from Guangdong province about war preparations, data from Chinese police about the horrific oppression of Uyghurs and other ethnic minorities. These would seem to be bad omens, shall we say, for people thinking about as a place to invest your retirement savings. For example, government employees. And yet, as we speak, that is precisely what is being pressed on U.S. military personnel, past and present, and other civilian government employees by something called the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, seemingly at the behest of the great financial puppet master, Larry Fink, an old friend of China. Give us your sort of independent view, put on your financial manager's hat, if you would, about the advisability of this course of action at this time, especially.
Well, this should be a wake-up call for all American-based companies when they or investment firms when considering whether to do business in China. If you still think that that's a good thing to do, you haven't got the memo. I mean, the lights are no longer flashing green. They've been flashing yellow, and now they're beginning to flash red. We've seen the... We're flashing. Maybe we're steady red. It depends what happens in Guangdong or Taiwan, which would certainly be a bright red. But the situation is that we've been routinely investing in mutual funds. Not just the federal pension people, but everybody in the United States is investing in pension funds. A lot of them in the Morgan Stanley Index, which includes about 99% of all the investable companies in the world. And a big chunk of those companies that are in those indexes, the public companies, are Chinese or based in Hong Kong or based in China's controlled states. And
China's controlled Hong Kong too.
Well,
for that matter.
China, I'd say now China's just slipped. You know, Hong Kong is now just part of China. It's not a legal fiction hardly anymore. But the thing that the Americans need to understand about Chinese companies versus American companies is Chinese companies under Chinese law, every single company is obliged to assist the party and its People's Liberation Army whenever asked to. So that means every company is theoretically and usually actually an instrument of the state, the Chinese Communist Party. So this distinction between private sector, public sector, state actor, private actor doesn't exist in China. And so when you're consciously putting money in a Chinese business as the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board proposes to do, you're basically saying, well, gee, we think it's okay to invest in Chinese companies, many of whom, either directly or indirectly, are involved in the arms trade and are inventing weapons to kill American servicemen and women. The reality is, if you're investing in a mutual fund offered by any securities firm all over in the United States, all over the world, you need to check with your broker to find out what companies are in it. And you're going to find, to your surprise, there are a lot of Chinese companies in it. And you ought to ask them to put your investment assets into something besides that, because in doing so, you're really investing in our enemy.
And our enemy and its growing threat to us, to put a fine point on it. Bill, two things that jump out at me for that. One is that the Thrift Savings Plans Oversight Board, this Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, is seemingly determined not to be transparent about the Chinese companies that are in these mutual funds. And we haven't got the list of them, by the way, just yet. This is going to roll out, we're told, in a meeting that took place today on the 1st of June. And only then will we know at least what the companies are that they're proposing, the mutual funds that they're proposing, some 5,000 of them, American military and civilian government employees invest in, but they're not going to know, unless they do the kind of due diligence that you're talking about, whether their money will in fact wind up going into Chinese companies. And I just wanted to put in a word for our friend Kevin Freeman and a really important initiative that he's got going. We've talked about it with him and others often, but it's worth mentioning in connection with what you just said, Bill. If you don't want your money invested in our enemy, your financial advisor may or may not be able to figure out whether that's the case, may or may not be willing to do that for that matter. And what Kevin's got, as you know, Bill, is a program he calls the National Security Investment Consultants Institute. And you can find out more about it at nsic.org. It is, or .com, I think it is. It's a vehicle that you can ensure your financial advisor will know whether you're being invested in China and how to get you out of it so that you can invest patriotically. Quick
Frank,
thought, Bill.
I think we need to make another point here. If you're an investor and you're sitting there skeptically saying, well, you know, the Chinese companies are doing pretty well. Well, they're not. Investing in the Chinese market has been a crapshoot, to pardon the expression. And you've not done well as an investor, maybe a couple of companies in the cement and mining industry, but certainly the tech companies have been fraught. Xi arbitrarily decided to shut a couple of them down, and you saw your investment go from 100 to 20 or 30 or 20 or 15, something like that. So you can get wiped out in the Chinese market for reasons that aren't national security. They're just flat out because with a Chinese company, you don't know who controls it. I mean, my thought, you do know who controls it, President Xi.
President Xi and the Chinese Communist Party. Bill, we have to leave it at that. We had a fascinating conversation about that lack of return on investment with Kyle Bass recently, and we'll be talking with you about that more next week. Thanks for your time today. Thanks to you for joining us as well. I hope you'll do so again with us next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.